If you would please turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 7. 1 Corinthians chapter 7. And the title of the lesson this evening is A Bachelor's Marriage Advice. If you're familiar with Paul the Apostle and his life, then you're aware that he was a bachelor. He's a man who was, scriptures present him as one who was unmarried, and he discusses that, as a matter of fact, in the text that we're going to look at this evening. But he discusses it in several passages. I've always found it interesting that this passage, which is, I think, easily the most extensive discussion in the New Testament about marriage, was penned by a man who was not married. Probably the next most extensive discussion about marriage was presented by Jesus himself, who never married. It's just interesting to me that in the New Testament, the ones who provided the most extensive discussions and teaching about marriage were not married. Other inspired writers of the New Testament who were married do indeed have some things to say about the subject. I think about the Apostle Peter and things that he wrote in 1 Peter chapter 3. But they are generally, I think, the discussions of those men are more limited, though they are men who were married. I'm not sure what to read into that, unless the Lord just decided that he would let the guys who knew what they were talking about write about the subject, and the guys who had no idea about about being married, well, they were more limited. In seriousness, the reason that the things that are said by the Apostle Paul on the subject of marriage, the reason that those things are valid and we ought to give our attention to, is because, of course, he wrote by inspiration. Jesus himself said that his words were not his own words, but they were the words that came from the one who sent him, from his Father in heaven. And so, though Jesus never was married, yet he could speak authoritatively, certainly, on the subject, because of who he was and because of the inspiration that he also had in his teachings. So I want us to look this evening for a few moments at 1 Corinthians 7. We'll be spending most of our time in that text. And I'd like to look through it and look for some insights that we might derive from what the Apostle Paul had to say. It may seem a little bit strange, but the text begins, this chapter, this discussion about marriage, begins with a discussion of the principles of not really with the discussions of the principles of marriage, but rather with advice that is given to Christians about not marrying. Now there are certainly in the first 9 verses, there are some general principles about marriage that are identified and that ought to be taken to heart. But I'd like for you to notice with me in the beginning verses that he says, concerning the things about which you wrote. Notice that, concerning the things about which you wrote, saying that in this letter to the Corinthians. In other words, the Corinthians had written letters, or a letter, to the Apostle Paul, in which they had raised questions, and they had raised questions about this relationship of marriage. Now, perhaps it's not difficult for us to imagine that people who were coming out of a Gentile society, one in which marriage was not particularly highly regarded, we wouldn't be surprised, I don't think, that such people would have questions about what is the viewpoint of the Lord on this subject. But he identifies the fact that his discussion here grows out of the questions that these brethren in Corinth had been asking. And he goes on there in verse 1 to say, it is good for a man not to touch a woman. Now, that is probably some surprising marital advice. When he talks about this, it's good for a man not to touch a woman. The touching of the woman is a figurative way of describing this marital relationship. But he goes on and he says in verse 2, but because of immoralities, let each man have his own wife, let each woman have her own husband, let the husband fulfill his duty to his wife, and likewise also the wife to her husband. Now he begins by saying it is good. And I think there's an important distinction that we need to make here. It is a good thing, not that it's a required thing, but it is a good thing for a man to remain single, essentially is what he's saying. But he says that it is also just a part of reality to acknowledge that that a man may be unable to live that life, that single life, as Paul was living. And that he might have to have a wife in order to avoid what he says in verse 2, are immoralities. So that a man doesn't engage in the kind of lifestyle that these folks were so familiar with in that Gentile society. So that a man would not become involved in those immoralities. It's a good thing for him to have. It's a good thing for a man to have a wife. And then he goes on and he urges, the husband to fulfill his responsibilities to his wife, and the wife to do so to her husband. In verse 5, he says, stop depriving one another, except by agreement for a time. He's talking about their physical relationship with one another. Don't withhold that from one another, except it be by agreement, except you agree that for a period of time you're not going to engage in these kinds of physical relationships with one another, and you agree that for a time that you abstain from this. He says in verse 5, that you may devote yourselves to prayer. But notice he says, come together again, lest Satan tempt you because of your lack of self-control. But this I say by way of concession, not of command. Notice he very clearly makes it known in these opening verses of his discussion about marriage that it is not a command. If you don't marry, you haven't committed a sin. And also, he acknowledges that you haven't sinned. In fact, he'll say this later on. He acknowledged, you haven't sinned if you do marry. It's one of those things in life, and there are a number of them, in which we make the choice of what we're going to do in regard to this. Will we marry? Will we not marry? Now clearly, most people in life marry. And there's no sin in their being married. But some people don't marry. And as we'll note, he has some things to say to those who don't marry. But first of all, he talks to those who do marry, those that are married. In verses 10 through 16, he says, but to the married. So we need to understand that these words of instructions that follow in the next few verses are words that are addressed to people who are married. And clearly, he makes it plain once again. You know, he doesn't say to them, well, you've committed a terrible error and you need to not be married. It's wrong for you to get married. The Lord doesn't want you married. Well, that was not the Lord's teaching on the subject. And Paul makes that plain. He says, to the married, I give instructions. Not I, but the Lord. What Paul says here, and he does this in order to draw a distinction from some things that he's going to say a little later. But he says that the things I'm going to teach you, the things I'm going to say to you, the married ones, are things that the Lord taught. It's not I, but the Lord who first revealed these things. And he says, not I, but the Lord, that the wife should not leave her husband. But if she does leave, let her remain unmarried, or else be reconciled to her husband. And that the husband should not send his wife away. But to the rest, I say, and we'll stop right there, because there is a distinction that's being drawn here. Paul's command to the married can, I think, be categorized in two groups that he addresses himself to. I think the first thing in these verses that we've just read, we see that he is addressing himself to Christians who are married, those that are married to one another. And his instruction is to these Christians is that they not dissolve their marriages. He says it's the Lord that says this. And the wife should not leave her husband. But if she does leave, let her remain unmarried, or else be reconciled to her husband. And that the husband should not send his wife away. What he says to two Christians married to one another is, you need to be devoted to that relationship. You need to be committed to that relationship. And you ought not to dissolve it, you know, easily or cheaply. Don't leave. If you do leave, he says, you know, he acknowledges the reality of things is we're still dealing with people. And people just don't always get along very well. Even when they're married to one another, they don't get along very well in some instances. Can you conceive of some set of circumstances in which a wife might leave her husband or a husband might leave his wife? And Paul says, I can conceive of that. Now, here's the standard. Here's the goal that is set out before us as Christians, married to Christians, It is don't dissolve the relationship. But if it is dissolved, if the wife, for instance, does leave the husband, in verse 11, let her remain unmarried, or else be reconciled to her husband. Here's the goal again. It is to preserve this relationship that exists, and you bring it back together. Otherwise, you remain unmarried, he says. And the husband, don't send the wife away, which is just a way of his saying, same thing holds true for the husband in these regards, as does the wife. Then in verse 12, as I pointed out to you, he says, but to the rest, I say. So that he's drawing the distinction here between these Christians who are married to one another and to Christians who are involved in a different kind of relationship. That is, they're not married to fellow Christians. He says, to the rest, I say, not the Lord. Now, there's an interesting contrast there, it seems to me, with what he has previously said when he said to them that, I don't say, but going back up to around verse 9 or so, when he says, the Lord says, not I, but the Lord. And what he's saying there is that this, what I'm about to say to you, is based upon the teachings that Jesus himself did on this subject. The Lord said, not I. But then he comes to here to verse 12, and he's addressing now a different situation. To the rest, I say, not the Lord. This is, in other words, instruction, it's teaching about this subject that the Lord did not do. Now, if you recall John chapter 16, verses 12 and 13, Jesus said to his apostles there that they weren't ready to receive everything that he was wanting to impart to them, everything that he was wanting to reveal to them. And so when he would be arrested and crucified and he would ascend back into heaven, he would send another comforter to them, one who would guide them in all truth. And they were to take that truth and they were to reveal it or declare it to others. And that, it seems to me, is what Paul is saying here. That this is what we're talking about now. We're talking about some things that are being revealed that the Lord didn't reveal, but that he, as an apostle of Jesus Christ, is revealing. I say, not the Lord, that if any brother has a wife, here's in other words, here's the inspired instruction to those, that if a brother has a wife who is an unbeliever, you see, he's talking about a different or a distinct situation from what he was discussing back up in verse 10 and following, when he was talking to those who were Christians married together, married to one another. Now he says that if a brother has a wife who is an unbeliever and she consents to live with him, let him not send her away. And a woman who has an unbelieving husband and he consents to live with her, let her not send her husband away. For the unbelieving husband is sanctified through his wife, and the unbelieving wife is sanctified through her believing husband. Otherwise, your children are unclean, but now they are holy. Essentially, his instruction to these Christians married to some unbeliever is, if the unbeliever is content to live with you, content to dwell with you, then you stay with them. You don't break the marriage. You don't break the relationship that exists. You don't leave that person. You don't even know, Paul says, whether or not that person might be saved at some point in the future. Maybe by that relationship, and the Apostle Peter writes about this in 1 Peter 3, that maybe by that relationship, that husband-wife relationship, over a period of time, he or she comes to understand and to appreciate the truth of the gospel, and they give their lives to that truth. You don't know that that won't happen. You stay with your mate if they're content to dwell with you. Yet, verse 15, if the unbelieving one leaves, let him leave. The brother or sister is not under bondage in such cases. But God has called us to peace. God has called us to peace is a statement, again, about the need to be committed to the relationship and the determination to abide with that mate, even that unbelieving mate, to abide with them. If they're content to abide with the believer. If they're not, then he says, you are no longer under bondage to them. Well, Paul moves on and in his discussion, actually gives verses 17 through 24, which we'll not spend a lot of time on, gives a few illustrations, if you will, of how one ought to be committed to following the Lord as they were called, or as when they became Christians. He says, only as the Lord has assigned to each one, as God has called each in this manner, let him walk. And thus I direct in all the churches. In this manner, let him walk. Let him continue in his life. Are you married to that unbeliever? Continue in that relationship. As long as they're content in it, you continue in it. Are you married to a fellow believer? You remain committed to that relationship, and you don't end it easily as folks were inclined to do back then, and as folks are inclined to do somewhat today as well. He uses some illustrations about were you circumcised when you were called, then remain so. And in other words, he's talking to those who were from a Jewish background and who were living as Jews. You don't have to stop living as Jews when you become Christians. You continue in that way. Were you uncircumcised? Were you a non-Jew? You don't have to change and become something else. You continue in that manner of living. So these are just a few examples that he gives. He talks about being a slave or being a freed man. You continue in the way that you're called. Let each man remain with God, verse 24, in that condition in which he was called. Now, in verse 25, he begins to address himself to another group of people. He's talked to the married. He's talked to those that are married to fellow Christians. He's talked to those that are married to unbelievers. He's talked to the married ones in completion. But he says, now concerning virgins, I have no command of the Lord, but I give an opinion as one who by the mercy of the Lord is trustworthy. Paul says, I'm going to talk to those of you that are unmarried, to the virgins, to the unmarried. And he says, I don't have a command to give to you in regards to this issue about marriage and how it may relate to those who are presently unmarried. I have no command of the Lord. But he says, I do have an opinion. And it's not an unimportant or insignificant or irrelevant opinion. It's the opinion of one who who says that he has been, by the mercy of God, found to be trustworthy. And so he's just basically saying to them, I want you to listen to my opinion. I want you to listen to what I've got to say. I think then, in verse 26, that this is good in view of the present distress. It is good for a man to remain as he is. The present distress was Paul's description here of the kind of persecution that was being endured by himself and by others, by fellow Christians. And I think probably most of us are familiar with various stories and accounts of how Christians were persecuted. And he says, simply, in view of this distress that we are facing, this distress that we are under, it's good for a man to remain as he is. Notice, he says, the distress doesn't justify changing one's marital status. If you're married, the distress doesn't justify sending your wife or your husband away. You need to remain as you are. If you're unmarried, the distress doesn't justify getting married. In fact, he says you need to give some serious consideration to whether it would be wise to do that or not. Verse 27, are you bound to a wife? Do not seek to be released. Are you released from a wife? Do not seek a wife. That's his, remember, advice. That was his recommendation. And he clearly identified it as that, as a recommendation. But if you should marry, now Paul, are you saying that if I'm not married in view of this present distress, I ought to remain unmarried? Are you saying that if I go out and marry then that I've done something wrong? He says, no, that's exactly what I'm not saying. If you should marry, you have not sinned. And if a virgin should marry, she has not sinned. Yet such will have trouble in this life, and I'm trying to spare you. What he says is, I'm just trying to give you some advice that will help you to avoid some heartache. In fact, he goes on in the verses that follow to describe that kind of heartache that they might very well encounter. He says, I say, brethren, in verse 29, the time has been shortened so that from now on those who have wives should be as those that had none. And those who weep as though they did not weep, those who rejoice as though they did not rejoice, and those who buy as though they did not possess. The whole point of these verses, he is saying that this distress is upon us, and the hardships and the difficulties and the changes that it's going to bring about in our lives are going to be dramatic, and they're going to be felt by us personally, and the time has come. This is what our experience is going to be. But I want you, verse 32, to be free from concern. One who is unmarried is concerned about the things of the Lord, how he may please the Lord. But one who is married is concerned about the things of the world, how he may please his wife, and his interests are divided. And the woman who is unmarried and the virgin is concerned about the things of the Lord, that she may be holy both in body and spirit. But one who is married is concerned about the things of the world, how she may please her husband. This I say for your own benefit, not to put a restraint upon you, but to promote what is seemly, and to secure undistracted devotion to the Lord. Now, I just don't know how Paul could make it more plain than what I'm saying to you is not a restraint that is placed upon you. I'm not telling you you can't get married. I'm just telling you, in view of the hardships and the difficulties that are coming our way, that you need to consider this. And that it would be better, it would be good to remain unmarried. But it's not required. I just don't know how it could be more plain about that. And so, to take these words, as some have, as being critical of marriage, some old bachelor who's venting about, you know, marriage and the fact that he hasn't been married has soured him about all of it. I mean, you can pick up some commentaries and the descriptions that some people make of these verses, and that's exactly what they say about them. And that's just absurd. It is a complete rejection of the reasonable discussion that a man has engaged in on a particular subject. What Paul is saying, and what we ought to keep in mind as well, if the time comes of distress that would be brought upon Christians today, and persecutions and hardships because of their faith, we need to remember this. And we need to reflect upon the fact that this may not be the best time, the best situation in which to get married. But we haven't done anything wrong if we do. And we just need to understand that there are interests that are coming right along with that new bride or that new husband are going to be interests and concerns about them that are totally right to exist, but they are going to be competing in times of distress and hardship. Those interests and those concerns are going to be competing for our time and for our efforts that might otherwise be devoted to the Lord. Verse 36, he makes it plain to them that they should not take this advice and turn it into occasion of wrongdoing. He says, if any man thinks that he is acting unbecomingly towards his virgin, in other words, if you're treating your daughter, who's of a marriageable age now, if you're treating her in a way that you feel is unfair and unjust, if she should be of full age, and if it must be so, let him do what he wishes. He does not sin. Let her marry. Don't take the things that I've said. It's almost as if Paul knew what some people were going to say regarding his teaching. He said, don't take what I've said to be a basis upon which to deny your daughter this relationship. If you think it's the right thing to do for her to marry, then let her marry. He who stands firm in his heart, verse 37, being under no constraint. Nothing about this, he's saying, that is a constraint upon you. This is not a matter, this is not a command, but has authority over his own will and has decided this in his own heart, to keep his own daughter, his own virgin daughter, he will do well. In other words, if your decision as a father is, it's best for her not to marry under these circumstances, during these times, you haven't done anything wrong in that. Yeah, in fact, you do well. You do well for her, is what he's saying. So then, both he who gives his own virgin daughter in marriage does well, and he who does not give her in marriage will do well. Or actually, he says, will do better. You know, It's just a fact of life. We may not like it, and we may struggle with coming to terms with it, but it's just a fact of life. Not everything is wrong, and not everything is required. There are things that we can make some judgments on, and that's what all of what Paul is saying here. Let me just very hurriedly say that he finishes by speaking to another category of those who are unmarried. And he says, a wife is bound as long as her husband lives. That's how long God intended the relationship of marriage to last. One man, one wife for life. A wife is bound as long as her husband lives. But if her husband is dead, she's free to be married to whom she wishes, only in the Lord. That is consistent with the Lord, consistent with the teachings of the Lord. But in my opinion, she is happier if she remains as she is, that is unmarried. And I think that I also have the Spirit of God. My opinion, for the same reasons that we've discussed in these other groups that he's been talking about, my opinion is this widowed woman would probably be happier in view of the distress that's coming, the hardships and so forth. She will probably be happier if she remained unmarried. But the same is true for her as is true was true for the other. She hadn't done anything wrong if she does marry. But she needs to marry in the Lord. She needs to marry in a way into a relationship that is going to be one in which the ways of the Lord can be honored. Well, I think probably most people here tonight would not be surprised that what this old bachelor had to say about marriage was not going to necessarily be politically correct, not necessarily going to be socially acceptable in those days or in these days either. But I would say this to you, particularly those of you that are unmarried, that as the days come and perhaps you consider this relationship, you entering into it with someone, I would urge you to consider whether that person that you are entering into this relationship with is someone who's going to help you fulfill the kinds of requirements that we've read about in these scriptures tonight. Whether or not they're the kind of person who's going to help you go to heaven. If in those circumstances, we're not always the most objective in making our judgments and about people. But if that fella or that young lady is someone who genuinely is the kind of person who's going to help you do what's right and go to heaven, you found a good person to marry. If you're not a Christian, our hope is that tonight is the night that you would choose to become one, that you would give your obedience to the gospel of Christ, you would submit to His will, and in doing so, you would become one of God's children and devote your life from this day forward to living as a child of God. And we're ready to assist you in every way that we can to make that so and to accomplish that. So if you would obey the gospel tonight, then we invite you to come to the front and let that be known while we're standing to sing.